Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I'm so happy to have you join us again. Today, my guest is Jean Hanks, a registered dietitian, writer, and runner. Jean and I dish about the challenges faced when going back to school as an adult, implementing self-disclosure in counseling sessions, and achieving big goals through small changes versus the human desire for immediate gratification. So sit back, enjoy the conversation. And let's dish. Welcome, Jean Hanks, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I am so excited to have you on and catch up with you. And on that note, why don't we launch right in and you can tell our listeners, how do you and I know each other?
Thank you so much for having me. Yes. So we met during my dietetic internship in 2019. You were my last preceptor in my rotation. And it was a really, really fun and unique experience working with you. You know, you at the time had a few different roles that you were filling as a dietitian. And I think prior to that rotation, the experiences I had with other dietitians were pretty, not cookie cutter, but pretty traditional. So they had a 9-to-5 that they had every single day. And it was really cool to work with you because you had a bunch of different things going on. And so that was kind of eye-opening in the sense that you can be a dietitian, but you don't have to have a traditional 9-to-5. You don't have to work in a clinical setting. You can have a private practice. You can be a, you know, an adjunct professor. You can work at a community center. So it was really cool to see how many different roles a dietitian can fill in one career. So that was really fun for me.
I appreciate that. I mean, a lot of the listeners who follow, this is now, well, I forget what this might be, but at the time of this recording, I'm currently in season 4 of this podcast, which started out as a pandemic podcast back when we were all kind of like under lockdown and I had nothing to do. And so it's almost funny listening to you count off the things I was doing, because as the pandemic started, because I was, you know, virtual in a lot of the things that I was doing, and because I played a role in so many different things, that a lot of things got shut down and I ended up losing, I think it was like 83% of my income and my businesses. So this is a natural foray for me to automatically just want to get into media and education. And that's something that I just always love doing. It just depends on the role that I play, the hat I'm wearing. But I love that you recognize the non-traditional routes, that there are so many things that people can do, not just in the profession of dietetics, but really anywhere. Like if you enjoy hobbies that could turn into income streams, then I always encourage people, you know, try to think outside the box and don't be pigeonholed if you want to, you know, venture into other things. But it's not for the faint of heart. Some of this, it's not for the faint of heart when you're juggling so many things and you're in charge of your own business and it can get a little cuckoo. So let's go back in time and tell us a little bit about your earliest food memories. A lot of what we discuss in this podcast starts off with family dynamics, traditions, cultural upbringings. Can you tell us a little bit about who you were as a child and where you grew up?
Absolutely. So I grew up in Brooklyn. And, you know, I think growing up in the city really exposed me at a very young age to different cuisines. My parents both worked 9-to-5s and I was often in after school programs. And so after that, we would typically go out to eat, you know, probably a couple times a week. And I think that really helped shape my palate. You know, at age 6 or 7, I was going to sushi restaurants and trying all these different cuisines and really, really loving them. And so I think now as a dietitian and someone who loves food in general and loves to cook, I think that has helped me kind of bring in those cuisines either when I'm counseling patients or when I'm just creating something at home. So that was one way in which my childhood kind of shaped my, I guess, food philosophy as an adult. And then the other is I was raised Jewish, and a lot of the memories I have surrounding food when I was younger are involving the holidays. So typical, you know, Passover food, gefilte fish, chopped liver, which maybe I didn't love so much as a kid, but do now. My mom's matzo ball soup. So those were, even though I'm not really religious, I really identified with the Jewish culture through food and through the holidays.
That is fantastic. And the fact that you grew up in the city too, because for people who might or might not know, Judaism spans a spectrum. Like you could be very Orthodox and be unable to eat certain things outside of what your Jewish faith, your dietary laws allow. In your case, did you have to follow certain guidelines when you were venturing out into different restaurants to make sure things were kosher or it didn't matter?
I did not. So we were not kosher. So I ate all the shrimp, all the shellfish, all the pork. So that was good in that sense. I wasn't restricted, but I do have, many patients now who are kosher, and it's definitely a challenge as a dietitian and also for them to kind of navigate their restrictions.
I want to tie into what you're talking about too with patient discussions, but also in the role that food plays as we grow up. So it's fantastic that you were able to have access and have exposure to so many diverse cultures and so many different food establishments, eateries, etc. And being a child too, a lot of times we find that children go through JAGs or they become picky eaters, and that potentially could lead them into being a little bit more discerning as they grow up as well. Tell a little bit about how that might play a role, or even if it does, like allowing them to, experiment with things or go try different options and encourage more diversity in their diet.
I feel very fortunate in that I was not a picky eater whatsoever. I pretty much ate everything. Although now I'm a pescatarian, so I don't actually eat meat, just fish. But I think I have dealt with many patients who are a bit picky and who maybe didn't grow up eating lots of vegetables, and that's really translated to adulthood, which is another challenge for me as a dietitian. But I encourage people to kind of explore their own backgrounds and their own cultures relating to food, and maybe try to, maybe it's a recipe that their grandma made that they want to experiment with and maybe make it healthier. So
I've mentioned this before, as far as my teaching is concerned. I have a class called Foods, Society, and Health, where we take a virtual trip around the world and we learn a little bit about different cultures and regions on this planet that have identities in the roots of the traditional food ways. However, when people come to, when they migrate to America or when they Americanize their diet, things get really thrown off. So I really like what you said about especially exploring the backgrounds of people's own cultures, because we do have such a diverse population in New York City, and we're not trying to take that away. So when we talk about, quote unquote, healthifying someone's diet, it doesn't mean we're going to force somebody to remove their staple foods, which, generally speaking, as the global population, they usually tend to have a lot of like rice or grains in their diet, and that's just a staple food. So we're not planning on taking that away from you. And we also have seen research-wise and implementation in the US's approach of a healthy diet, of implementing the Mediterranean diet as like the gold standard. And I really don't believe that's the case, because if you do look at the diets across the world, there are so many healthy components of this that this doesn't, of each person's food pyramid or each region's food pyramid, that it doesn't have to just be an Americanized healthier version or implementing the Mediterranean diet. So I love what you said about that, is making sure that there's a cultural appropriate approaches to helping people with managing their disease or increasing the health components of their diet without taking things away from them that they love. So, do you work with a variety of different people in the role that you're playing right now? And we'll talk a little bit more about that too, but just as far as age-wise or life cycle or conditions are concerned.
So right now I'm working at a new practice, and we're in the weight management space. So that means that, as far as age, we're seeing people from their early 20s all the way up to, 70s. So it's pretty diverse in that sense. Mostly women, but we do have some men. And then pretty much everyone is a city dweller. So they have really busy lifestyles. They're, maybe not used to cooking a lot. It's a different role for me in that, whereas before I was kind of working with maybe people who didn't have as stressful jobs, and you know, they weren't maybe the sole breadwinners of their family, so they had a little more time. And so I'm now seeing that time is a huge barrier, and maybe not knowing how to cook is a barrier. So these are different challenges that I'm facing as a dietitian now, because before I was promoting, you know, let's cook every meal, and now that's really not feasible for most of my clients.
Right. And I think that that also speaks to our approaches when we do set up goals and what we call like interventions or treatments for somebody's particular situation, not necessarily always related to a chronic condition, but just it could be situational. Like you were saying, they might not have the ability or the means to be able to scratch cook or develop, you know, weekly meal plans that meet every single guideline that we perhaps want them to. So I want to talk a little bit about our journey too, Jean, in the sense of going back to school and or becoming a dietitian can really put a stress on those of us who are in it. And for anybody who is pursuing a second career or going back to school for something, it can really change your whole perception and your psyche sometimes too, because you're coming in as sometimes, you know, an older adult or just adult in general. So you're already maybe set in your ways, or you have some certain routines and structure that you've already implemented. And now, boom, you get this wrench thrown in your plan. So can you speak a little bit going back in time again, not too far back, but how did you manage some of the challenges when you were going back into your internship and the role that that played in your own current routine of the things that you were doing? How did you manage it? And then we'll talk a little bit more about how we potentially could also relay that information to our current clients.
When I was, I didn't take much time off in between undergrad and my grad program and then my internship, which I think was helpful in the sense that I didn't have to really uproot my life or change a ton about my routine. But what I will say, and you know, anyone who's gone through an internship program as a dietetic student will tell you, you know, you're not getting paid for this experience, and you're in some cases, most cases, paying for the experience. So I think that was a big challenge. And, you know, I'm not technically a student, I'm working, but I don't really have the financial stability to live as a working adult. So that was really challenging. And specifically with food, you know, it was, okay, I need to make sure my meals are kind of planned so that I stick with a budget. I can't be going out to restaurants like maybe some of my other adult working friends. So it was a bit of a, I don't know, maybe a limbo where you're not really a student, but you're not really in the workforce.
Right. Yes. Very challenging to implement all those things too. And so now being able to take that into consideration and then having the population that you're working with kind of coming from the same place of, you know, I'm a busy city person, I don't really have a lot of time on my hands. It's kind of neat to be able to share some insight into, like, I went through that too. And this is in the counseling world, this is sometimes known as self-disclosure, when the person with whom you are meeting, right, the professional, the healthcare provider, is sharing some of their own insight so that you as the patient or the client are aware that, oh, this person knows what I'm talking about. So I think that really helps with bringing in a more robust conversation versus like, I had everything handed to me on the platter, I was able to hire a personal chef while I was going to school. Like, we're not completely disconnected from what the population is going through. And so you and I talked a little bit leading up to this also about implementing small, realistic, sustainable steps towards goals. And especially when you're a city dweller or a city resident, everything is very fast paced. A lot of my previous interviews have also kind of touched upon this thing about, you know, instant or immediate gratification and convenience of everything. We want everything done right away. So can you walk us through a little bit about, you know, how patient do we have to be in order to get to the end result, and the steps along the way that can seem a little bit time consuming or might have a trial and error component? How do we establish that or at least share with our clients to support them in understanding, like, not everything is going to happen on a 30-day challenge. Like, that's not going to work in order to be sustainable in what you're planning on doing.
Absolutely. I have seen this firsthand with really my last job, where I had some patients who were with me for a year plus, and I saw them every 2 weeks. And every session was building on a very small habit, and really not going on to the next step until that habit was ingrained. And that is really what I think is makes changing any habit the most successful, is very small steps, consistency, especially with changing eating habits. Consistency is so key. And I've seen the results doing that, versus, you know, you see a dietitian once and they give you a meal plan and you try to just overhaul your entire diet and your exercise plan. And that maybe works for a couple of weeks, but then the patient burns out because there's just too much to focus on. And I'm really seeing that with my current clients. You know, they're very motivated. They're used to being very successful in their lives otherwise, but it's this one thing, which is changing eating habits, which is very, very difficult, especially if you're, you know, older, because these habits have been so ingrained for years. And so the challenge I'm seeing is, how do I convince them that the small steps, while they will take longer, in some cases years, but that's how they're truly going to be successful, and that's how the change is going to be sustainable. So that's kind of the challenge I work with now, is how do I use my past experience and my past success with other patients and you know, convince them that it's really the small changes that work.
Right. And I'm, as I usually do, I'm writing down notes here. And one of the words that came up is success, this idea of being successful and what that means to different people in individualized ways. Like you, I'm not, or at least I should say, I don't end up just giving people a meal plan to follow, because I do agree with you. You're not, you know, yes, you can put that into practice, but then you might end up finding fault with it, or it might not be able to be something that fits into your daily life. So it almost feels like you're swimming upstream with trying to plug something in to make it work versus us coming up with a plan that works for you as an individual person. And so this idea of success, just because things take a little bit longer, like consistency is going to be a slow and steady approach. It's going to be something that you're having to reconfigure your habits in a way that establish a different routine in your life, or maybe put something else away so something new can come into it. And so just because you don't see what you think as the client is, you know, the changes happen in a very quick way, doesn't mean that you're not successful. It means that you're putting in the effort and the time and the energy in investing in yourself. And I always try to say, it's really hard to kind of, you know, force people to prioritize their health when they're focused so much more on just the convenience of things or the way things can look or be available to them. It's all about, what can you do now to help support the future you? And a lot of people don't really want to do that. So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, when it comes to resistance, or in our world, what we call the readiness or the stages of change, you know, when people are maybe not so compliant, are there certain go-to things that you have in mind of the approaches that they can take just to kind of chip away at stuff? Like, I have in my head a little bit of a script that I do. Do you have, you know, let's do this thing, or do you have to kind of cater that to each individual person that you're meeting?
Yeah, it definitely depends on the individual. I try to pick out what their long-term motivators are. And this comes with the, I think, the motivational interviewing that we do in a counseling session. And I think people who aren't in the dietetic space don't understand that we are in some ways therapists and we're counselors. And so while we're obviously educating about nutrition, we're really trying to, you know, create some behavior change, or at least support behavior change. So I try to pick out, you know, the big motivators for people, why they want to make this change. And I really try to hone in on that and make everything about why they're doing it.
Yeah, that's a fantastic approach. And just to add to that a little bit, in the sense of, it's not about the food, it's about the behaviors. And dietitians are a specialty group that is part of what we call your interdisciplinary team. So you have your primary care physician that you go to, your doctor who, you know, gives you your physical exam and tells you what or what not is abnormal on your blood tests. And then hopefully, if there are certain things that could potentially help with managing or preventing a chronic disease from happening, they would perhaps refer you to a dietitian. That's not always the case, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people have to reach out and do that on their own. And with those of us who are, I think, more of like the newer generation, we really are trying to get to the heart of it, like in the true literal sense of the form, but also figurative sense. So we're not handing you something that's like, cut out the salt from your diet or eat these certain things, you know, three times a day. We're trying to figure out what is motivating you and what are the things that got you here. And that's also going back to the discussion about how things potentially take some time. So if you are mm-hmm. an adult, and you've had issues with early childhood upbringings where, like me, you were kind of forced to eat everything on your plate. We call that being members of the Clean Plate Club. Or if you were surrounded by parents who were maybe not so great with the words that they used to describe your body image, or if you were chronic dieting, these are things that take, you know, decades in your of your time to get to a certain point. And then now we're trying to say, let's stop that and fix some of these habits, the things that you're used to doing. So allowing yourself to be patient with that. And there might be times where we even say things like, you know, we just want you to be mindful for the next week. Just focus on the things that you're doing that kind of cue you or trigger you to make an action. What are some things that are stressing you out? I talk a lot with my own clients about quote unquote comfort foods. There's a reason it's called that, because you are trying to protect yourself, your emotions. And so you're going to be grabbing foods that make you feel comforted, but it's a harder thing to sit with that pain, that trauma, that stress, whatever those things that are frustrating you before you go and take an action of, let me feed this. What can I do to kind of fix this situation? Is it boundary setting? Is it crying? Is it journaling? Is it going out and, you know, running just to kind of get this stress out? So there's so many other factors that come into play, but yet it feels like food is always the go-to, the trigger thing that happens. And that's how people either restrict themselves or excessively, you know, give themselves permission to eat what they want when they want, without, you know, maybe some boundaries on that. So I'm glad that you're bringing this up too, of like, you know, the motivational interviewing, which is what we do, the finding of the motivation behind what the person wants, not just to fit into a certain size of pants or whatever. Like, what is really the issue here? What do you want to get at in the next decade of your life? Or how do you want to protect yourself in the future years of when you age, of not getting, you know, not falling and breaking a hip or anything having to do with like heart disease? Like, what are other things that we can pull into this? And I really hope that that plays a role in some people's understanding of why we're not sometimes just handing them a piece of paper and saying, just follow this and come back next week.
Right. Totally. And I think along those lines, you know, having a kind of an interdisciplinary team, which is something you mentioned before, where you have many, many people in different disciplines kind of on your team. So you have, you know, maybe a dietitian, maybe you work with a psychotherapist, and those can kind of overlap a bit, but, you know, you have people that are helping to support you and motivate you and not just telling you what to eat, what not to eat.
Right. I want to go a little bit back in time here to your, one of your previous jobs. You and I have both, I don't know if you knew this, but we both worked at the New York City Department of Health. You did something different than I did, but yeah. So I know you worked at the farmer's market. So we have the, again, we have the luxury of, and the benefit of being in the city. We have farmer's markets in almost all of our boroughs and a lot of the different neighborhoods here. And I think that's such a wonderful way just for people to learn about A, local foods, B, hands-on demonstrations of things. I used to do food demos down the street here at our community center. So it's just a neighborhood community center, not related to health or anything. They have, you know, fun things for kids and like, you know, painting things, and they do fundraising. And we did a whole thing with their farmers, or I should say it was technically their CSA, right? So community supported agriculture, where they would get deliveries of farm shares and the community would chip in and they would buy certain shares to pick up every week. So we had no cooking things. Like, we did everything was raw, and it was so fun just to share with people. Yeah, you could eat raw carrots, you could eat raw vegetables, you could eat raw spinach. Like, a lot of these things you would be great if they were cooked, but we wanted to show that you don't even need cooking equipment sometimes to make yourself a healthy meal. So can you share a little bit about what your role was there?
I was the cooking demo person. So I led the culinary demonstrations at the farmers markets, and I had a few sites. Most were adults, but I also had one that was actually tailored toward kids, which was really, really cool. So for that one, I had, young participants, and that was really about getting them exposed to different fruits and vegetables, walking them through the farmer's market, showing them what different things were, how does this vegetable smell and how does it look, and how do we incorporate this into a kind of a kid-friendly meal. And then for the adult workshops, it was really about teaching them about the benefits of certain ingredients. And then, as you said, showing them that you don't actually need to cook some of these foods. You can make a corn salsa where everything was raw, like the corn was raw and all the veggies were raw. And how do you make a dressing with it? And then actually in the colder months, we did do some cooking. So we had a little, makeshift stove, and I would actually cook sweet potatoes, and it was all pretty much plant-based. There was no meat, there was no dairy. So it was really, really cool and rewarding to show people, you can make a really balanced, nourishing, delicious meal just with produce at the farmer's market.
Oh, absolutely. I love the idea of a few things. Focusing on ingredients versus maybe recipes. Like, try not to get too caught up in the weeds of being able to cook or have a long list of items that you have to go shopping for. It's really just about buying some staple items, even, canned beans that sit in your pantry that you can implement, rinse out, and put into whatever, whether you cook them or they're already cooked inside the can, obviously, or you warm them up, adding them to salads. Like you said, the corn idea is fantastic. That could be something that you could even buy frozen. That's corn kernels in a bag, and just, empty that out, warm it up, or let them thaw out and add those to different kinds of meals throughout the week. And having some other kinds of staple foods, whether they be grains or different types of vegetables that might be in season. So I love this idea of just kind of making things a little bit like simplifying the approach of healthy eating. And also, in the sense of too, when it does get a little bit colder out, or for whatever purposes, if people want to make one pot meals where they can have, just like a giant turkey chili or a three bean dish of something, and you can keep that in the fridge or the freezer and take things out as needed. So even for the people who tend to say, my barrier is I don't have time. My barrier is I don't know how to cook. My barrier is I can't cook anything. You still could potentially piece together some strategies for yourselves to be able to do things like this. It's just a matter of how realistic is it to implement into your daily or weekly routine. And this is where the dietitians can come in, right? So we can step in and we can help with educating people and giving them some inspiration, some ideas. A lot of us too, myself included, we'll sometimes even go with you on trips to the grocery store, and we'll walk up and down the aisles and just, kind of help you brainstorm with stuff. And I just feel like I don't want to necessarily deny somebody an actual reason as to why something cannot be done in taking ownership or accountability for their diet or for their health. But I also want to maybe shine a light on, are these things excuses? Like, are there reasons that you have that are legitimate reasons, or are these ways that you just keep trying to pile up something that I can't go further, so I want something to be done for me, or I want to take a quick and easy approach that will not be sustainable? So here's an opportunity too for anyone who's listening. Allow yourself, myself included. There's a lot of times where I'll say I'm too busy for something. Well, is it, or am I just getting caught in the weeds, or I'm not delegating appropriately? So take a moment, because again, at the time of this recording, we're in technically now fourth quarter, right? A lot of times at the end of the year, people will either start winding down, like nothing matters anymore because it's the end of the year and I'm just going to ride it out. Or in my case, I like to kind of brainstorm and visualize how I see the next year for me. And yes, side note, I realize that time is a social construct. Like, it doesn't matter what day of the week or what the page is turning on your calendar, you can start or end things at any time. But the point is, this could be just a little bit of encouragement or motivation for anybody who might be a little bit stuck, who might be feeling like, I just can't. If not now, then when, right? If we don't plan, then how will you potentially be able to succeed if you are having some goals that you've been meaning to meet and it's just been years upon years and you haven't? Well, now's the time to say, does it no longer serve me? can I get rid of that thing? This is something that I just can't keep trying to achieve. Or now is the time to maybe fix or fine tune some of those things that are in your life so that you can finally check that thing off your list and be like, yeah, I'm successful.
I think going back to, you know, what you were saying about the end of the year, I hear this a lot surrounding holidays. You know, I'll meet a client and they'll say, well, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas are coming up, so I'm just going to wait until after the new year to really start changing these habits. And then, you know, in another few months, there's another holiday. You know, there's holidays all year round. And so you can't just wait until the season is over to try to start making a change, because then it'll never happen. You know, it's like the classic, well, I'll start my diet on Monday, you know? So I think making sure people understand that there's always going to be something that comes up. There's always going to be a birthday. There's always going to be a holiday. So the time is kind of now to just do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I bring this up too, when people kind of use that as a reframe with saying, it's like going on vacation. Do you not take your medicine with you because you're on vacation? No, of course not. Like, you still, you know, wherever you go, there you are. So try to just look at it more as behavioral things. Like, what am I keeping up with? Obviously, yes, you're allowed to take a day off or have a rest period or breathe, lean into low energy times. But if you're going to keep putting things off, then how important is it really for you to pursue? And why does it have to wait again? Tough love, maybe in a way. So Jean, let's talk about a current day in the life of you. What are some of the things that are keeping you up to date and current with, you know, research, with our profession, but then also what are some things that you enjoy doing for your own self-care or your own routines?
Absolutely. So, you know, I try to read what's happening in nutrition research. I get the briefings from the academy. I try to look at those. And I feel like I'm always learning. You know, I'm kind of in a new space as far as nutrition in the weight management, you know, world. So I'm learning about hormones. You know, I work with endocrinologists and how those affect the body and how we approach food. So I feel like it's great to be constantly learning. You know, nutrition is always, the research is always coming out. There's always new ideas, which makes it a really exciting field. So I do try to stay on top of that. And then just what keeps me kind of going, I try to stay active. I run a lot. And I think that really kept me kind of sane during the height of COVID. You know, that was the only time I could really go outdoors. So I really ramped that up during COVID. And it's something that really keeps me kind of level.
These are what I call the non-negotiables, correct? Like, yeah, things that no matter what happens in your life, you're still going to make sure you do these things that keep you, like you said, keep you sane, keep that mind flowing, keep the stress at bay.
Yeah.
So as we're coming up towards the end of our conversation, I want to learn a little bit more about what the future you entails. You are in this current role that you're playing now. I know that you have some of your own pursuits too. Are you planning on specializing in anything even further, niching down at some point in the future, or maybe scaling up in some way?
Yeah. So I think my niche, and this is something that we've talked about actually, but is surrounding cooking. You know, I love to cook and I want everyone to love to cook. I know that's not totally possible, but I really want to help people understand how they can make it work for them in their busy lifestyle. You know, how do we simplify it? I'm a busy New Yorker too. So I understand the challenges that people have, and maybe they're tired and they don't want to cook a whole meal. So I think I really have that perspective and that connection that I can help people find ways to make cooking nutritious meals fit within their schedule. So that's kind of down the line. But I am settled in a new 9-to-5, which has been great. It's a brand new practice called Well by Messer. And we have that kind of team-based approach. So it's me, a psychologist, an endocrinologist, a trainer. So we're all kind of working together to provide that comprehensive care, which I think is really cool and unique.
I'm looking at your Instagram page while we're talking. And I love the inspiration that you have, like the meals that you've posted on here, because of the fact that you just said, you know, cooking is so near and dear to your heart. It's something that you enjoy doing and you do want to encourage other people to get involved in some way. And some of these foods that I'm looking at, like if somebody doesn't have the time to maybe, I guess, fillet a fish or, you know, start from scratch in some ways, like there are definitely modifiable components to some of these recipes. Like you can buy perhaps, you know, pre-roasted chicken or I should say roasted chicken and add that to your plate, or buy a salmon steak already done for you at the deli counter at your supermarket. And then you maybe create the size, or you can hard boiled eggs and add that to your salads just to add a little bit more, you know, healthier dietary fats and add some extra protein in something. I'm even looking at, like, scrolling through here, some things that are no cook items too, like, you know, just again, vegetarian, plant-based types of foods, things that you can maybe pop open, like a can of tuna, or you have something here with, I believe, anchovies, like a little baguette with anchovies on, like really fun, nourishing things that don't require a lot of time in the kitchen. And I'm hoping that people can get inspired by this. Well, see, this is the problem with the podcast is that we talk about food and then I look at food and then I'm like, I just ate, like I shouldn't be hungry, but it's so enticing. And I think this is the thing too, that I myself get very inspired by the people with whom I interview, because you all have such different unique backgrounds. You have different approaches to certain things, and you do have foods that I like learning about. So even things that I have, like I'm looking through some of these things, you also bake, like you had a pie on here. So it's a variety of stuff. It's not just cooking savory foods, but also sweet things as well. And you're making me kind of sad for my past, because I used to do this all the time. All the time. I'm one of those people who I'm like, I don't have time to do any of this right now. So moving on, is there anything that we didn't touch upon, that we didn't cover, that you would like to share with the listeners before we officially wrap up?
The main message I want to get across is, you know, if you want to make a change, it's about small steps. It's about, you know, not putting too much on your plate, so to speak. And really focusing on the small habits. That's what I try to encourage everyone to do.
That's a great way to leave our conversation as well. Some inspiring words from Jean. Thank you. So speaking of things on your plate, what is on your plate today? We're talking literally on your plate as far as what's your next meal going to be. And then in the broader concept of maybe personal or work stuff, you know, what is the thing that you're going to be doing next?
So I actually just had breakfast, so I guess I'll tell you about that. It was a sauteed sweet potato with eggs, which is one of my favorite breakfasts that was made for me actually by my fiance. So I actually didn't have to cook. and then just personally, I'm actually getting married in 2 weeks.
Oh, wedding planning.
Yes. So that's coming to a close, but we're very excited. So once that's over, I can focus a little bit more on maybe professional stuff too.
Well, congratulations on that.
Are
you doing it here in New York? Are you having a destination plan?
We are going to be in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn.
Just as I imagined.
I love that. This is really the true, like your roots are there. This is where you currently are. And that's something that's so fun about city living too. I mean, well, listen, anywhere that anybody lives, if you enjoy the town in which you are or the state in which you are, you know, you can always find a way to kind of bring back and allow the city to give back to you as well. You don't necessarily have to go and venture outside. You can find everything you need right at your back door, as they say.
Totally.
Jean, it has been a true pleasure speaking with you, catching up with you. I'm so excited for where the future is going, and I'm really so proud to call you a colleague and to have played a small, but I hope significant role in the start of your journey as a dietitian, because I always call all of my former interns, you're my family now. So I really appreciate the time that you're spending with us here, and I wish you all the best. Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard,
I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.